Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Chase Thomas podcast. The Chase Thomas podcast.
My nephew needs me to record. See, I already hate it.
All right, hello. Welcome back to another episode of the NFL Super Friends here on the Chase Thomas podcast, where I'm still the aforementioned Chase Thomas coming to you live from Knoxville, Tennessee, Everything School HQ. Joining me, as they do each and every week, we've got JP Acosta of SB Nation. JP, good evening, sir. How are you?
I'm doing great, guys. How are you guys doing?
Pretty good. Pretty good. As my wife and I were watching Curb before we jumped on this very program. Jared Bailey, also here of USA Today, the pump fake and behind the steel curtain and A to Z Sports. Jared, good evening, sir. How are you?
I'm good. I'm repping CM Punk after just a generational episode of Monday Night Raw as we record this podcast on a Monday night. Just tremendous, tremendous wrestling television.
Okay. Did CM Punk come back?
Yeah, he's been dealing with a triceps injury, but they were in Chicago, which is his hometown. So he came out and just had a tremendous promo segment with Drew McIntyre and Seth Rollins. So just amazing, amazing stuff.
Top tier hater shit.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Top tier hater shit. Well, we're not going to do hater shit. No Evan Swords this week of 49ers Hub. Hopefully we'll have Evan back next week, but we soldier on the trio here to talk all things NFL on this program. What I think is pretty interesting right now, and I want to pick your brain on this, JP, is Washington. Because I've said for months that everyone who's just penciled in chalk, 1-3, quarterbacks, 1-3, these three teams are going to do it. They all need quarterbacks. They're just going to do it. Teams just can't help themselves. They have to make it weird. They have to overthink the draft. They have months to think about their pick. They have months to think about these prospects. They have months to fall in love with different kinds of guys in the draft process. And I feel like that's what's happening here a little bit, is people are getting more hypnotized by JJ McCarthy in recent weeks, it seems like. But when you look at now it being out there that Washington might be open for business for the number two pick and they're fielding calls for number two, what does that say to you, JP? Does it say that's smoke, or do you believe that's real and that the Commanders might be trading out of that spot for somebody like JJ, or maybe not even JJ? Like, what do you think in terms of that?
I know we said we weren't going to be on our hater shit, but I'm sorry. It's time to go back to the old me. This is so freaking dumb. I think, if anything, this is an incredible ploy by the Minnesota Vikings to try and get somebody to trade up for JJ McCarthy so they can get whoever falls. That's exactly what the plan is here. Sure, they might like JJ McCarthy, but I'm sure they love Drake May. And I'm sure they love Jaden Daniels. If anybody really gets froggy and tries to, and even if Washington gets froggy and wants to take JJ McCarthy at two, if the Raiders want to get froggy and take JJ McCarthy, that just means one of those quarterbacks is going to have to fall. And that benefits the Raiders here. Not the Raiders, the Vikings here. I think the JJ McCarthy thing is so fascinating because it is so similar to Mac Jones in 2020 going into the 2021 draft, where everybody's like, hey, you know, the Niners, They're at the number three pick. They could trade. They traded up for Mac Jones. That feels really dumb. It's the same thing. You know, I do not believe for a single second that Drake May will be the fourth quarterback off the board. I don't even think Drake May will be the third quarterback off. I think that is he is 1A to Caleb Williams, 1B for me in this year's draft class. And it would be incredibly dumb for a team to pass on him with it with that second pick. I don't think Washington would trade out of that. But overall, to me, this just seems like the Vikings trying to put some smoke on the J.J. McCarthy fire.
Jared, do you share that sentiment?
Yeah, like this whole thing about J.J. McCarthy and these quarterbacks and Drake May. Like, I don't know if it's just, you know, this time of year where teams are like, oh, you know, we could move back. We're not set on taking a quarterback. Wink. You know, like it's like Jerod Mayo said something about it today or yesterday at the league meetings when people asked him about, oh, what are you going to do? You know, what are your plans at three and everything? He's like, oh, you know, Jacoby Brissett, you know, we could roll with him for a year. Like, I hate this time of year so much because, one, what do we expect them to say? Like, yeah, we're definitely going to take this guy. Like, obviously, they're not going to just show their hand like that. But also, you know, no one with a brain believes that the Patriots are going to roll with Jacoby Brissett. And now that, you know, if Washington ends up taking J.J. McCarthy with the second overall pick instead of Drake May, then I have a lot of questions about what's going on in that organization, because I praise them so far this offseason, because I, you know, there seems to be at least some sort of vision with what Adam Peters and Dan Quinn are doing, and good for them. But if that ends up being the pick, man, like I just don't see what all the hype is around J.J. McCarthy. I can see what the hype is around Drake May. But this just all seems like, you know, oh, we've got a month till the NFL draft. What can we try to talk into existence? How about J.J. McCarthy at two? Sure. But the way that Dan Quinn was talking, like, it's, I don't know, man. And Pelissero was talking about it on NFL Network saying, hey, you know, that could be the direction that they're going. And so it's just, we're in that weird in-between stage where free agency's done and the draft's still a month away. Storylines are going to come and, you know, it's going to be like, what's going to happen here? I just hate this time of year because we get stories like this and it drives me bonkers.
So I even think J.J. McCarthy as a player, he has potential to be an above average starting quarterback in the NFL. He has above average athleticism. You can see the arm talent when he's throwing off of play action over the middle of the field. He has enough athleticism to pull a zone read or to be able to run the bootleg stuff and make it look real. But there are still a lot of warts in his game that require at least a year to kind of sit. And I think we've done this thing where Drake May needs to be like, oh, Drake May needs to sit a few games. No, he doesn't. He and Caleb Williams are the two most ready to start week one if the season started, or if this upcoming season started. I feel like this J.J. McCarthy thing, like I said, is an incredible ploy by the Raiders and Vikings to try and get somebody to draft J.J. McCarthy before Drake May or Jaden Daniels, and then they use their picks to trade up for either one of those guys. I think the Raiders really, really want Jaden Daniels. I think with Antonio Pierce having coached Jaden Daniels at Arizona State, there's already that history there. If he drops, if he falls, that is exactly what they're going to do. They're going to try and trade up for him. I think Drake May throwing to Jordan Addison and TJ Hawkinson and Justin Jefferson would be awesome. But this all just seems very, very NFL-like. We've seen this game plan before. We have seen this play action before. Don't fall for the play action here. We have seen this run fake before. Better get back in the coverage.
And if recent memory tells us anything, you know, one, maybe two of these guys will be good. The rest of them are going to be, you know, maybe one of them is an above average starter and the rest of them are just going to have to find their way.
Or this is the class where four starters, we get four. And then next year is the one with, I mean, what looks to be a much weaker class. What if that's the one where you get the Kenny Pickett type draft? I mean, maybe this is one where we have four.
We said the same thing, though, with the Lawrence draft class with Lawrence and Fields and Lance. And so, you know, it's, I'm not banking on that happening. I think the last time that we really got a special class like that was, what, 2004 with Phillip, well, Eli Manning and Ben Roethlisberger. Well, what was the other?
2020 had Joe Burrow, Justin Herbert,
that's true.
Taylor
that's
Hurt,
fair.
Jordan
yep,
Love,
yep,
and
that's fair.
Tua.
Yep, that's
so,
fair.
Yeah, it kind of comes in waves where there's
this could be a wave year, right?
This could be the 2020 year where there might be some stars, but there are probably some real high level like starters. There may be some good guys in there, you know, but we'll see. I think there are going to be a lot of teams that really like Spencer Rattler. I think Spencer Rattler is fine. There's a lot of stuff to not like about Spencer Rattler, but you see the arm talent and you go, hey, I can work with that.
He's the ultimate guy if he was not in South Carolina. Like if he was at Michigan the last 2 years, look at Spencer Rattler like?
I think if he had a more competent offensive game plan around him, the conversation would be a lot different, but he also has a lot of warts in his game.
But he'd be a no question top 10 guy, I feel like.
I don't know about no question top 10.
If he was on Michigan, or he transferred to Ole Miss, or
I think
I don't know who's another one.
I think he probably would be first round. If we're just saying if Spencer Rattler played the way he did at South Carolina, but with UCLA's weapon or something, like maybe he'd be a first round pick, but I don't think he would get into the top 10. I think that's where we're kind of doing the JJ McCarthy thing. But instead of JJ McCarthy being super young and having 27-1 record, Spencer Rattler is a senior, you know. Yeah. So I think teams are going to fall in love with him. I think a team is going to fall in love with Bo Nix. We all know what team it's going to be, but that team is going to fall in love with Bo
Nix. The Broncos?
It's the Broncos.
Yeah.
The Broncos absolutely will love Bo Nix. I think a team's going to fall in love with Michael Penix, whether that be day two or early day three. We have yet to see, but it's going to be really interesting to see how the quarterbacks shake out past number like one.
He's like the Dak guy, I think, of this class, where like he falls and he's a middle round guy, and then Penix is just starting before a lot of these guys because he's more ready and he just finds himself in a situation where people overthought Penix and the injury stuff, and he finds his way onto the field faster than people might expect.
I can see that, but I also think with Penix, he's a very stationary passer. I think with Dak, and I know it's not a one-to-one thing, it's more just...
No, I just meant the circumstance where he might find... Yeah.
Yeah. I think Penix is going to require a lot more than what Dak had, even though Dak had a lot of great things. He was able to elevate it, or he was able to play right away because he could maximize like when things broke down because of his ability as a runner. And then he became a supercomputer quarterback. Michael Penix doesn't really have that athleticism and doesn't really have the supercomputer thing because he hasn't seen every coverage in football, you know? So I do wonder what the ceiling is for Penix, but I think...
Well, you talked to him, right? Like, what do you think? Do you think, based on y'all's film study and everything else, like, what do you think is the perfect scheme for him?
I think a scheme that will allow him to not be a shotgun exclusive quarterback, but one that will allow him to take deep drops, ones that will allow him to set his feet in the pocket and kind of create a deep pocket for him and give him time to get the ball downfield, attack downfield. I think it probably won't happen because their quarterback room is really, really loaded right now, but the Browns would be really good in terms of offensively what they would like to do. I think Penix will work there. I don't think this will happen either because they traded for their guy, but the Seahawks could be interesting. The Steelers, possibly. I don't think they'll do it now because they just traded for Fields. But again, both those guys are kind of 1 year. We'll see what happens. But
Miami?
No. We have to stop doing this with Miami. I don't think they are not drafting a quarterback this year. I think
they should.
I don't think so. I think Tua is...
But you don't want Tua insurance, just like if he gets hurt or whatever. Like, you're just too close. Like, there's just so many dudes. You've invested really well. You have so many playmakers. I don't think it's crazy to invest.
Tua insurance is a vet on a team that wants to make the playoffs and not a rookie who will be seeing his first career like NFL playing time in like week 15 against...
That's how you get Skylar Thompson'd.
Yeah, that's how Skylar Thompson happens. So I would not draft a guy this year. I'm letting it play out again. If it really just isn't working, then maybe you consider it in 2025. But he hasn't given you a reason to. I don't think Miami has much of a reason to not move, to not keep him around, because he's just like been a single season like passing, like he set records for the Dolphins. I understand the playoff stuff, but there have been a lot of circumstances with the Dolphins in the playoffs over the last couple of years with injuries and just the falling apart physically.
I and not to get too far off track and focus too far on Miami, but I think we've kind of seen their peak with Tua under center. I don't think that they should draft a guy either, because I'm also somebody who, like, once you get to like the mid rounds, you're really just blindly throwing darts at a board and hoping one of them sticks. Taking quarterbacks in, you know, the fourth round, the fifth round, and things of that nature. If Miami does make a play at quarterback, I don't think it's going to be via the draft. I think it's going to be with like a blockbuster trade where McDaniel gets his Stafford. Who that may be, I don't know. You know, if the Chargers are dumb enough to do it, which I'm not going to rule out. If the Jaguars and Trent Baalke are dumb enough to do it, which I'm not going to rule out. But I think that if and when they do move off Tua, I think it's going to be similar to a situation with the Rams and when they moved off Jared Goff, where they're like, all right, man, we are close. We've got the weapons. We just need an upgrade. We just need a guy. And I think that that'll be their move for a new quarterback, not necessarily the draft.
Really quickly, before we move on to another thing, we have to stop the fan fiction of Jim Harbaugh trading Justin Herbert. That is so. We are running out of ideas.
Like, I don't think he picks the job if Justin Herbert's not there. Like,
why would Jim Harbaugh leave the defending national champion to go play with Easton Stick? He could have just stayed at Michigan for that. He probably would have a quarterback better than Easton Stick.
Plus, I don't know. That investigation in Michigan, someone's going to get dug up on old Jim.
So the fuck what? They will just continue to win football games if Jim Harbaugh was still there. Justin Herbert is also making $250 million.
Make a lot of money.
If you trade him, it has to be after the draft. You know what you can't do until you know what you can't do after the draft? Draft a quarterback. So that kind of defeats the purpose of trading Justin Herbert and drafting a quarterback. You know?
By the way, I'm not saying the Chargers should trade Justin Herbert, by the way.
No, I'm not saying like you specifically. I'm talking about the fan fiction people saying, oh, just Jim Harbaugh's gassing up J.J. McCarthy. He wants to draft him. Like, no, man. Like, what are we doing? He's gassing him up because that's the quarterback he played with or he coached for like the last 3 years.
Fair enough.
I mean, we'll see. We'll see what ultimately happens, but I tend to agree on the Justin Herbert front. I think it's funny. Jarrett, can you explain the new hip toss tackle ban and how do you think defenders will adapt? And, you know, can they actually adapt to this rule change?
I mean, sure they can, but I do think that there are certain position groups that are at a big disadvantage. You know, if you're a nickel cornerback trying to tackle a massive tight end, or if you're a nickel cornerback trying to tackle Derrick Henry, you know, what else are you supposed to do, man? And I know that Sam Monson is trying to preach this rugby tackle stuff, but like when you're not taught that, you're taught a very specific way throughout your entire life. You can't just turn things around and be like, oh, okay, yeah, I'll just rugby tackle. And it's comparing apples to oranges as well. But when it comes to this, it's just the NFL continuing to stack an already stacked deck against defenders. Because already, you know, if you commit any sort of pass interference, which is already a very controversial, lots of ticky-tack calls throughout the NFL season, it's spot of the foul, first down, offense. If the offense commits pass interference, it's a 10-yard penalty. So even in similar penalties, the defense is at a discrepancy. If you sack a quarterback with all your body weight on him, it's a 15-yard penalty and a first down. If you try to make a ball or play on the ball, but you hit a defenseless receiver, it's a 15-yard penalty. And now if you tackle a guy and the lower part of your body, your body weight comes down on a guy's legs, all of a sudden now that is a penalty. I'm all for player safety, and I get, especially, you know, head and neck area stuff, completely fine and understandable. but I can't take the NFL seriously when they talk about player safety, when players have been begging for all 32 NFL stadiums to get natural grass instead of turf for the past however long, and the NFL just refuses to do it. But a small handful of guys get injured on the hip toss tackle, all of a sudden that's a big priority all of a sudden. I think it's...
And it's really just what? Tony Pollard and Mark Andrews?
Tony Pollard and Mark Andrews are the ones that come to mind.
Right? Oh, are we missing anybody?
Mahomes, last year against the Jaguars.
On the playoffs.
That was a hip drop tackle. I think... I forgot who else, but... So, I think the NFL executive chair said that there's been like a 65% increase in hip drop tackles that resulted in 15 injuries last year, which feels like a really interesting number to kind of just like, 15 injuries, you know, but we, you know, it feels weird to kind of come up with that number.
So
I'm sorry, go, Jason.
Oh, well, like, so what do you do? So like, cause one of the weirder things I sent to you guys, I think in the group chat of like, when you're putting on a new rule and part of the rule change is emphasizing, we're not planning to call this very often. Like that coming out where it's like, because it's going to be very subjective and it's going to be like, this could be game altering in some instances. Obviously, we know going into it, it's never something where you want to go into a rule and know, oh, this is going to be extremely difficult for refs to officiate this fall and know when to throw this flag, because it's already going to be a little bit gray in terms of what's egregious and what's not, because it does seem like they're not going to just call it whenever it happens, because like you said, there is a lot of instances of it happening. It's just like holding, where holding is not called. You can call holding on just about every play in pass pro for somebody, and you don't. You get it when it's a little bit too egregious, the right guy sees it, whatever. It's another thing, but I do think it's funny when these rule changes come out, and I don't know if you agree, of like, oh, here's how, don't panic. We're not going to call it as much as you think. And you're like, okay, well then what are we doing? If you're already like backtracking on like, don't freak out. We know this could get weird. It's not going to be that big of a deal.
I think a lot of it is going to be like, it won't be as many flags, but it will be a lot of fines. Where, you know, it's similar to, you know, any other penalty where, okay, they didn't call that helmet to helmet. That was kind of ticky tacky, but a player still got fined $10,000 for it or whatever. So I expect a lot of that to happen this coming season. But I think an unintended consequence of this is, like, especially, I mean, like I pointed out, like smaller defenders, you know, look, that dude is so much bigger than me. I can't drop the hip to tackle him. Can't hit him up top because then I'll get called for a penalty for hit to the head. I don't want to do it, but like, I'm going to aim at your knee, man. And if you get hurt, I'm sorry, but that's the only way I'm going to be able to bring your big ass down. So I think that a lot of unintended consequences are going to be, there's going to be more knee injuries around the NFL because guys don't want to get penalized or fined. So they're going to be like, look, I got to hit them low, but I can't use my body weight. So I'm going to have to, you know, somewhat target the knee here. And I think there's going to be more injuries as a result of the rule than there were before the rule was even put in place.
So one thing also to keep in mind, the NFLPA unanimously voted against this rule. Mm-hmm. They did not want this to happen. This was the NFL and the owners agreeing on this rule. Second thing is, with the limited amount of padded practice, there's not going to be a lot of time to implement this on actual targets that actually want to hurt you. Like, mm-hmm. It's different from trying to tackle a tackle dummy or a pad, because that pad isn't moving at you. That pad isn't changing the strike zone. You know, it's going to be really difficult for guys early because there's not a lot of experience doing the new types of tackling. I think the rugby style tackles, like, yeah, I think it might work, but also the body styles are different from football than a rugby, because I mean, they're a lot bigger in football and they're a lot faster in football. And you're also wearing pads, you know, those things matter. There's a lot more space in the NFL, you know? So I really do wonder how this is going to work initially. I'm not talking about long term, but those first like 6 weeks of the season, how many hip drop tackles are actually going to be called? Because guys just don't know. You're making guys think as the play is happening, and that's how injuries happen. That's how, like, when you slow down, it's, look, Isaac Newton was right about a lot of things If you slow down and as the other thing is speeding up, you're going to end up on a highlight reel or in the injury room. So I wonder how many of these hip drop tackles are going to get called in the first 6 weeks compared to like the rest of the season as players and teams get used to and adjusting to the new rule.
I wonder if they don't adjust and they see how much is getting called, where it's like, because you talked about how it's like unanimous there. Yeah, like that whole thing of like, just let's see what you're going to do, because you said you're not going to call it that often or whatever. And we'll see. Like, we'll see if you find us. You'll see how it goes. Because I think, like you said, it's just going to be too hard to readjust. And like you said, you don't want to overthink and that kind of stuff. I mean, JP, with your background on the football field, like, is there something, because when these kind of things happen, like we thought about targeting, it's like, well, you're not going to see the results for years and years down the line, because it has to, like, guys learn how to tackle a certain way. Like, you're not going to be able to adjust Brian Dawkins at 36 years old. Brian Dawkins is going to be Brian Dawkins until he retires. But at the youth level, that's where you can change. That's where you can start making change in terms of how they tackle and learn to play and this, that, and the other. Has that already been happening in terms of curbing the hip drop tackle? Or is there anything that you can say outside of like the rugby style that's been talked about? Is there a way to legislate that out of the game at the youth level right now?
At the youth level, no, because the biggest thing at the youth level is these kids are still trying to figure out how to move their bodies, how to use their bodies in an effective way on a football field. Like, think about when you were like 13, 14, 15, 16 in that eighth grade to like high school area, you didn't know how to move your body in an athletic way, in a way that was fitting to play football. So the biggest thing is trying to get the movement skills down. Mm-hmm. And maybe, you know, when they're like moldable balls of clay athletically and in terms of body movement, maybe that'll work to try and implement the rugby style tackles, but we're still trying to get guys to tackle without leading it with the head. Yeah. You know, like, we're at a point, especially in the college game, where we saw it last year. They're calling the targeting, but then they're reviewing it and taking it back. And this is year two of the targeting rule, you know? So I wonder if we get to a point, like, not this year, but next year, where you get to review the hip drop tackle, because it happens so fast. Like, I don't think people understand how quickly windows and my gaps close in the NFL. It's the biggest reason why if anybody ever says they could gain 5 yards in an NFL football game, they're liars, because they have never seen how quickly those gaps can close at the NFL level and how quickly those guys can close space and make tackles. And you're really just, nobody's going in with the intent of injuring anybody. But the whole intent, especially because the video going around was Logan Wilson hip dropping on Mark Andrews and Mark Andrews getting injured. That wasn't a tackle made to end. That wasn't a dirty play. That was Logan Wilson trying to stop Mark Andrews from getting a first down in a critical division game. What, it's going to be so difficult for guys to tackle from the side.
Yeah.
You have to try and figure that out, you know, like without having an angle. You know, I think with the video Sam Monson posted with the rugby tackles, those guys had an angle. You know, it was easy to kind of square up and find the window. If you're running laterally with a guy like this, it's going to be hard to find that angle rather than like here, where you can kind of meet him at the leg point, you know? So I want to be optimistic, but I can't right now.
Interesting. But we'll see how it ultimately unfolds. But still, it's kind of wild to see the stark contrast. Everybody in the NFLPA and everything, nope, please don't do this. And then everyone, the owners, oh, we're doing this. Great thing we got going here. JP, love it or leave it. Sneed to the Titans, sir.
So as a Jaguars fan, leave it. But as an NFL fan and objective NFL writer, which I...
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I am always 100%. Don't check my tweet. I love it. I love what L'Jarius Sneed brings in terms of his versatility. He played inside and outside. He shadows number one receivers. He will follow number one receiver everywhere. It'll unlock a lot of Denar Wilson's defense. Denar Wilson comes from the Jets. He's going to bring kind of that attacking 4-3 defense. And having Chidobe Awuzie and L'Jarius Sneed and Roger McCreary is such a fun corner room. They're all versatile. They're all physical. They're all willing to tackle. And you can really get creative with blitzes and pass coverages because all these guys are so physical and willing to match up with anybody on the field. So I love it. I am kind of wondering what the plan here is, Tennessee. I mean, of course, we're thinking, oh, maybe like we still don't know the jury about Will Levis. Well, the best way to figure out what Will Levis is surround him with every good player in the NFL and figure it out. It's sink or swim time. And if it doesn't work, then, you know, you'll figure it out, or you still have enough cap space next year to maybe swing a trade for a quarterback who's on the market. So I love it, but I am also wondering what their long-term goal is.
I also love it. I think that they're, you know, looking at, okay, you know, we got a lot of cap space. We don't have an expensive quarterback. Let's go out and get a Calvin Ridley. Let's go get a L'Jarius Sneed. They signed Lloyd Cushenberry at center. They're making a lot of moves to, like JP said, to put Will Levis in the best situation that he possibly can to succeed and see what they have. You know, as a Steelers fan, like, I can say what I want about, you know, the Kenny Pickett situation, and obviously everybody knows my feelings about that. But it can also be true that Pittsburgh didn't handle that situation well, where they had a horrible offensive coordinator. They didn't do a lot of things schematically well, and the way that they handled it wasn't right. So the fact that Tennessee is looking at it as like, okay, you know, hiring Brian Callahan, I think, you know, that could end up being a good offensive-minded hire. To go with Will Levis and getting him weapons and getting him or trying to build a really good defense on the other side of him. I applaud the effort. And if it doesn't work out, they can at least say, okay, well, you know what? We tried. And if Will Levis isn't the guy, then that's okay. We'll try to find the guy, but it's not going to work for lack of try.
It is interesting that they're kind of we've kind of just gotten to the point where like, yeah, they're going all in. And then the other side, for Kansas City, I was listening to Eric Eager, and he had somebody on the Sumer Sports NFL show this week. And I like listening to it, but I'm very dumb. It's one of those where I'm listening to the cap breakdown here and like why the Chiefs had to do it. So y'all would answer this better than I in this regard. Why did the Chiefs have to trade L'Jarius Sneed?
Well, they got to pay a lot of people.
Yeah.
You know, Creed Humphrey going to get a lot of money. Might be the highest paid center in NFL history by this time next year. Trey Smith going to get a lot of money. You had to pay Chris Jones a whole lot of money. It's one of the benefits, but also one of the drawbacks of drafting so well defensively, that when those guys all come up to get paid, you got to make these choices. And I think, again, Kansas City has done so well in their defensive back development. They probably have guys who are ready to step up in the absence of L'Jarius Sneed. Joshua Williams played really well in the first Chiefs Super Bowl run, kind of got cast away or cast off with L'Jarius Sneed moving outside and Trent McDuffie's sticking inside. He'll move to an outside role. Maybe this is a deep draft for corners. You address corner. You let Trent McDuffie kind of play the outside a little bit more. We'll see what happens there, but really, they had to do this because they weren't going to be able to pay L'Jarius Sneed and Chris Jones and Creed Humphrey and Trey Smith and Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce and still do everything else that they want to do. Because look, as much as people say the salary cap is fake, they are liars. The salary cap is real. That is something that this trade is the reason why the salary cap is real. You just can't pay him what he wants.
And JP pointed it out, like, I think that they felt comfortable enough with it for multiple reasons. One, they've drafted really well. You know, they drafted L'Jarius Sneed and Trent McDuffie, and they both turned out to be studs. They drafted George Karlaftis. They drafted Nick Bolton. They drafted Creed Humphrey. They drafted Trey Smith. Like, all of these guys, like, for as good as Mahomes and Kelce are, it also needs to be talked about just how well this team has been built around them with mostly homegrown stars. You know, I think we had, you know, similar conversations after they traded Tyreek Hill. Like, oh my goodness, what's Veach doing? Why are they not just paying Tyreek Hill? Well, they've won two Super Bowls ever since the Tyreek Hill trade. So, I think that Chiefs fans, at least they should have the utmost confidence in the front office to be like, look, you know, obviously it's not easy to, you know, say goodbye to a guy like L'Jarius Sneed, who's helped the team win two Super Bowls. But there's a plan, and it's a defensive back class that's deep enough where they can find somebody to maybe not be as good as L'Jarius Sneed right away, obviously, but if they can be good and be molded and developed into becoming something close to what L'Jarius Sneed was, like they did with Sneed and McDuffie, then great. But the front office has built up more than enough goodwill for fans to look at this and be like, okay, there's obviously a plan here. And once they paid Chris Jones, I think the writing was kind of on the wall for Sneed. It was like, okay, they can't keep both of them. So
I don't know. I want to see three Super Bowls in a row before I really start buying into the Veach era in Kansas City. I need to see a little bit more. Speaking of buying into some stuff, Jarrett, something that I saw pop up on Behind the Steel Curtain this week that I wanted to ask you. Is the Tyler Boyd stuff real, and is he a fit in Pittsburgh?
So apparently there's like some sort of standoff's a weird word to use, but like they can't really come to terms yet. I assume it's money. I think it would be a fit. Right now, you look at what the Steelers have done at receiver. It's been a lot of depth moves. You know, they just signed Quez Watkins today. They picked up your boy Van Jefferson not long ago. So you look at their receiver room right now. It's George Pickens, Van Jefferson, Calvin Austin, Quez Watkins, and then they have Marquez Callaway and Denzel Mims on futures contracts. So they'll be able to.
Really have all those Denzel Mims, man? That's one that just didn't work.
Yeah,
one that got away.
Yeah. Yeah, so they'll have opportunities to battle for, you know, the fifth and sixth spots in camp. But my guess as to what the Steelers are thinking at receiver right now is they think that they can go and trade for somebody, or they're just going to draft two guys. Maybe the Boyd stuff comes to fruition, but they don't have a legitimate X receiver on the team right now. Pickens is, you know, a very good deep ball threat, but he's not somebody who's, you know, a natural creator, a natural separator. He's, you know, the guy that you have, you throw the 50-50 balls up to down the sidelines. He can eat in yards after catch situations, but he's not naturally, you know, an X receiver. So, you know, if there's been tons of, you know, murmurs and whatnot for the past couple of weeks about Brandon Ayuk, if that's something that Omar Khan can pull off, then great. Apparently they reached out to Washington to ask about Terry McLaurin. That would be great. So I think that they are still, you know, throwing their line in the pond and seeing if they get any sort of bites.
They're being aggressive. They're trying to aggressively fix this offense.
Mm-hmm. And hey, that makes my heart happy, man. If they're able to pull off one more trade and it ends up being Brandon Ayuk or Terry McLaurin, then they should build a statue of Omar Khan before the season starts. But I think that either they're going to do that where they think, okay, you know what, we can pull off a trade here. So we're not going to be, you know, too aggressive in the free agent market, which, you know, they haven't been. Again, a lot of depth signings at the position. Or they're just going to go into the draft and draft two guys, because Quez Watkins, Calvin Austin, Van Jefferson, none of those guys are going to be the two or three receiver in the offense. I think Ricky Purcell would be a good fit. They had representation at the Western Kentucky Pro Day to see Malachi Corley. Steelers wide receiver coach took Xavier Worthy out to dinner after his pro day. So like they're doing their due diligence on a lot of these receivers. They're definitely going to take one. They have four picks in the top 100. It wouldn't surprise me if they doubled it.
It would be incredibly funny for Arthur Smith to see what he had in Atlanta with Drake London and Kyle Pitts and all those monster wide receivers, and just go Keon Coleman and George Pickens and Pat Freiermuth and Darnell Washington, just run it back. I think Keon Coleman would be an interesting fit in Pittsburgh because I think people were underwhelmed by the 40, but I also don't think people understand Keon Coleman's game very well. He operates in the mid-range a lot better. He is a yak, and he also can create in the short and intermediate areas, which complement George Pickens being really good at two routes, a slant and a go. So I think that'd be interesting. I really like the Malachi Corley shout because that's what Arthur Smith. Malachi Corley can do everything that Calvin Austin does better.
Yeah.
So that'd be really fun. I think Pearsall would be interesting. But I also wonder, again, if you had the choice between a A.D. Mitchell or Brian Thomas Jr. at 20 versus Amarius Mims at 20, what is the pick going to be there? Or if you have a chance at a guy like Cooper DeJean or something, like what is their thought process there at 20?
If I had to guess, if that's a situation where, you know, they've got, okay, Amarius Mims, Brian Thomas, you know, Cooper DeJean, I think they would go Mims. I think like the worst kept secret at the combine was like, the Steelers really like Amarius Mims. So if they get the opportunity, it wouldn't surprise me because then they can move Broderick Jones to the left tackle. They can keep Mims at right.
They really like big Georgia guys.
Yeah. I mean, Darnell Washington's
Shocker.
On the line too. Yeah.
Shocker.
turns out these guys from hell, they might take the Cedric Van Pran, the center from Georgia too.
Just build the entire team out of the 2021 Georgia Bulldogs.
There's been worse ideas in the NFL. So I
love
think that
this is a strictly Pennsylvania thing because Philadelphia is doing the same thing on defense. I mean, it's kind of funny that that really is like Philadelphia. We need the Eagles versus the Steelers sooner rather than later in the regular season because there's going to be. Do they really? I want to see how many actually Georgia players are starting in that game potentially. It might be bonkers.
That'll be fun.
Flipping the script just a tad here as we get near the end of tonight's show. I want to do a JP tape don't lie that I've had sitting for a little bit that I wanted to pick your brain on real quick. JP. Jimmy Lake. I really enjoyed the Ryan Nielsen 1 year experience for the Atlanta Falcons last year. It really made me sad that the Falcons get a great defensive mind and the defense looks spicy and looks fun and got after the quarterback and guys developed and it was fun. This is a fun Falcons defense. A lot of it, like, and that's not even really a shot at Dean Pease. I think he just didn't have the personnel the first couple of years, and it was just kind of like, I don't know. Dean Pease was also a bend don't break, and it was just just what he had in terms of the talent. But now you're going to Jimmy Lake, who obviously recruited well, was a great defensive play caller at Washington with Chris Peterson. What should Falcons fans know, or what? When you look at the Falcons personnel, does it strike you as a Jimmy Lake fit? Because it's kind of an under the radar big jump for him, I think.
So the first thing you need to know about Jimmy Lake is that man knows how to recruit, find, and develop defensive back. He recruited Sidney Jones and Buda Baker, recruited Trent McDuffie, recruited, Miles Bryant. You know, all those great Washington DBs that we know from like modern day Washington football, Jimmy Lake was the guy who got them there. So you think about potentially a next step for Clark Phillips. You know, you think about unlocking Jesse Bates even more. Something that Ryan Nielsen really did really well is kind of use Jesse Bates as the centerpiece of the defense, you know, allowing him to play everywhere on the field and be the versatile matchup spot. So I think about that. I also think this should not stop them. This kind of prioritizes their ability to go get a corner on day two. If they really want another outside guy, if they believe Clark Phillips can be the Trent McDuffie, you know, play him in the slot and you can win there because love Clark Phillips, kind of tiny. Like that's just, you really can't win like that on the outside. So if you want to go get a guy like, you know, maybe Ennis Reigstraw from Missouri, that would
do you think they go 8? Could they go corner or safety at 8 just because of what Lake's? Like, he might value the secondary more than anything else?
So, I think Atlanta at 8 is going to take the first defender. And I think that'll either be Dallas Turner or Terrion Arnold. I wouldn't be surprised at either. You know,
Corey McKinstry, would that surprise you?
Kool-Aid at 8 would surprise me. If they trade back and take Kool-Aid around the late mid to late 20s, mm-hmm. that wouldn't surprise me. But I think Kool-Aid is more of a mid to late first round pick. I truly do want to see his long speed because mm-hmm. he kind of coasted a little bit. And he was not to say that he didn't play well this year, but he kind of got overshadowed by Terrion Arnold, who is phenomenal, by the way. Just a phenomenal player. I think he spoke about it at length, but the Tennessee game last year, mm-hmm. he got torched. And he went back in and was like, hey, that's never happening to me again. And he proved it, you know, that he plays with the mentality of a number one corner. Anything mm-hmm. about pairing him with AJ Terrell, that seems pretty fun to me, you know?
Yeah.
But the Falcons desperately need some pass rush. They need mm-hmm. a different type of pass rusher. They have a bunch of, grr, I'm going to push through you, you know? Like, I think Dallas Turner would be, that's the perfect fit. That's the perfect player for them. Just the explosion, the burst, the length, the ability to play against the run. I think Jimmy Lake, as a coordinator, is going to be fairly good. I don't think it's going to be phenomenal. It might take a little bit because, you know, going from college to the NFL, very different game. But the dude knows how to get the best out of his DB. I wonder how the Falcons are going to potentially generate pass rush, especially if Grady Jarrett is not 100% coming off the injury.
He's also just older. Like, I think Grady Jarrett just might be, I mean, he's on the wrong side of his career, I think, now. Like, it doesn't mean he's not going to be a really good player, but I think his best football is probably behind him.
Yeah. You can't count on Grady Jarrett to be your only viable pass rusher, which is why I think you have to go get Dallas Turner. Or if you want to trade back, I think Lantu Latu would be a perfect fit in that defense.
Scary with the injury stuff where he retires and comes back and I don't know.
I know it scares you with the injuries, but if he has a clean bill of health, he is the best pass rusher in the draft. Just in his ability, regardless of what kind of set is thrown at him, he has great hand usage, great counter moves. But I think Atlanta, honestly, they can stay at 8 and pick the best defender available. Or, you know, if Minnesota wants to trade up for a quarterback, my scenario has always been instead of jumping straight from 11 to 5 or 11 to 4, they do what the Eagles did in 2016 to draft Carson Wentz. They go from 11 to 8 and then 8 to 4. So they trade out because Atlanta doesn't need a quarterback now, but they can stay in the range for the top defender. And then Atlanta or Minnesota can jump from 8 to 4. So Arizona can stay within range of any of the top quarter of the top receivers while also getting that second first round pick.
No. I like it. Final thing here. Jarrett, I had to end here with you. OBJ, your favorite. Do you like a potential fit for Odell Beckham Jr. in Miami?
Dude, I don't care. that's my answer. Wherever he goes, okay. Good for Odell Beckham for getting another 1-year contract for a decent amount of money. Miami's probably the best place just because they're going to throw the hell out of the ball. And he might be a guy put in the slot that can get 40 catches. That's fine. But let's stop pretending that Odell Beckham is a game changer that's going to take a team over the top. He's not. So no.
I actually think the OBJ thing will be pretty fun in Miami because their biggest issue is on third down against man coverage, they were throwing to Braxton Berrios.
Yep.
You can't keep throwing to Braxton Berrios. Love Braxton Berrios as a player. Love him as a guy.
Love the name.
He's
handsome
one
as
of the,
hell.
He's one of he the only like players who played at the University of Miami to also play for the Miami Dolphins. He's one of those rare players to do that. You can't keep throwing to him on third down. That has to stop. Odell Beckham Jr., you can move him around. You're able to be more versatile with Tyreek Hill and Jaylen Waddle. But he also can create separation in the short to intermediate areas. He won't have to be Batman in Miami. He won't even have to be Robin. He can just be, you know, like
Blue Beetle.
He can be Jim Gordon. He can be Jim Gordon. That's good. That's good for OBJ. Jim Gordon's still important. He has some important moment in Batman,
Jim Gordon.
Yeah.
I'll you're going you what, Jim right Gordon? Now, you didn't even give him not, a superhero? You just got him a police commissioner? No powers? No anything?
Odell Beckham is not Jim Gordon. Jim Gordon. Mike McDaniel is Jim Gordon, first of all.
Sure. But the point stands that he does not.
We're the only podcast that will compare Odell Beckham Jr. to Jim Gordon.
I can think of something. Odell Beckham Jr. is Harvey Bullock. He's Who? There. So he is the lead detective for the GCPD. He's just, I don't know. He's a character for sure.
Okay.
I don't know. It's probably mean, but he's always whining about something.
Okay.
JP was waiting for the end of that.
OBJ does not have to be Captain America or Iron Man.
Mm-hmm.
He can be Hawkeye.
Okay.
He can do Hawkeye stuff. Hawkeye still has some important things that happens. In the
he has
MCU,
moments where he becomes the main character. Mayor of Kingstown's a great television show. Jeremy Renner can be the star when he needs to be.
In the MCU, every important moment that happens in the MCU has Hawkeye involved. That's what OBJ can be in Miami. Hmm.
I really just don't think that that's the case anymore. Like, I
how old is he now?
31.
Probably like 30, 31, 30.
31, 32.
He is 31, right on.
Yeah, I mean, like
I'll be 31 before. For all the year, all of the season until the very end. So
yeah, I mean, like I've said before, he's still fine, but again, we've done this. For
are
the
you gonna
past
be mad time. If the Steelers end up signing him?
I mean, I won't be mad. I don't think it's gonna. I don't think that's.
I don't know.
Jot
this down, JP. I'm waiting for a Jarrett tweet. It
depends on like what the money. If they do like 1 year, $15 million, yeah, I'll be a little bit annoyed. But they, I don't think that that's gonna happen. Now look, man. Like I've said before, like we've done this for the past couple of years now, where we're like, oh, where's Odell Beckham gonna go? He hasn't had 1,000 yard receiving since like 2019. He hasn't been great since like 2016. Like he's fine.
I don't know if he hasn't been great since 2016. I think pre-ACL injury, Odell Beckham on the Rams.
Isn't that when he had the ACL injury?
Yeah, in 2021.
Oh, with the Rams.
With the Rams, yeah.
He was good.
He was really good that year before he went down.
He was good. But the ACL injury took a little bit of the explosiveness. But why I think it's good for Miami is because he doesn't have to be the guy. He can play off of a Cooper Kupp level receiver in Miami. He can play off of Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle, and that'd be perfectly fine. He doesn't have to be the guy.
I think that he ends up going there, first of all. Like it's the place that makes the most sense is Miami. And then for the next 9 months, we're gonna talk about the Miami Dolphins. Look at this high powered offense with Tyreek. Oh my, who's gonna stop them? And then they're gonna run into the Chiefs again in the playoffs and get absolutely dick slapped. And I'm gonna be here waiting next January to be like, I told you. So I'm wherever he goes, man. I mean, look, I hope that he gets money. I hope that he plays well. I know that I'm kind of like the resident dude who's like the anti Odell. I'm not trying to be anti Odell. I'm anti Odell narrative. So I hope he gets paid. Hope he plays well. Hope he has a good year. I just don't think wherever he goes, all of a sudden is like a Super Bowl contender. If he goes to Miami, I think they're still vaguely in the same spot, a little bit better.
That's fair. Jarrett, what can the good folks check out from you all across the internet this week?
On the Pump Fake, which if you're listening to this podcast, should be out already. Amy Trask is joining me on the Pump Fix. That'll be a lot of fun, just going over all the free agent stuff, trades, all the big news around the NFL. So always enjoy talking to Amy. USA Today, I did a write-up about my thoughts on the hip drop rule, so you can go read that on USA Today. All the Steelers coverage up behind the steel curtain. And follow me on Twitter/X at JBaileyNFL for all of it.
There you go. I love it. JP, what about you over at SB Nation this week?
Going to be doing a lot more NFL draft work, especially now as the NFL draft gets closer. I'll be preparing. I'll be getting that stuff ready. See what I'm tweeting. See what I'm doing.
There you go. I love it. Jarrett, JP, always a pleasure. Evan, miss you as always this week. And I will talk to y'all next week.
Nicely done, nephew. Chase Thomas Podcast. Hell yeah. Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.